Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you had any problems with any type of breaking through any walls, she can help you with that. She's been there, she's done that, and she can help you. If you're having any problems with life, please see a professional. Don't wait. Don't think you can handle it yourself. Don't take it out on anybody, a neighbor, policeman, fireman, anybody. Please seek the help. Well, guys, it seems to be McGregor doesn't have the boxing ability, but he certainly is a comedian.
One thing you knew is that the press conference would deliver. Both of those guys are good self promoters and shameless self promoters at that. So that's what you got.
Yeah. Both guys don't care to a degree. So you can have some aspects like things, but both guys aren't mean spirited. Guys, they just they're trash talkers, and with trash, you get some unlimited.
I guess he's having problems with his cell reception. What did you think, Ty, with the suit? Did you see that?
Which one? The FU suit?
Yeah.
He's a shameless self promoter, and these guys are trying to hype the fight, and quite possibly you may have just saw the most entertaining part of the whole engagement. So
sure,
we will see. Yeah.
Well, where will we start tonight? Ty, when start?
Well, tonight we have a lot of boxing on the cards tonight.
Yeah.
We got a lot of boxing. We got Jezreel Corrales, who I'm very looking forward to seeing against Ruben Castaneos, who is coming off a career best victory over Gamboa. Also on the card tonight, which is a very interesting fight, kind of old line versus young line. You have Robert Guerrero against Omar Figueroa. So I'm really looking forward to that fight. Figueroa is moving up to 147 to face Guerrero. This will definitely be the best opponent in front of him. But to most, Figueroa looks like a guy who, he's been a champion down at lightweight, junior lightweight, lightweight 140. He's making noise at 140. But, this will be his first true test. It'll be interesting to see how that fight goes. I think people are sleeping on it. I think it's an action fight that people are not really paying attention to, but it's a fight I'm looking very much forward to. Joe Smith against Sullivan Barrera, which to me is quite possibly the most intriguing fight of the night. Kathy Duva's own Sullivan Barrera, so I'm very, very curious to see that fight, actually.
And does Burchell also fight Maior tonight?
Yes, is just a tremendous action fight.
I think that's going to be the fight to steal the card.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That'll be a lot. That should be a very active fight, huh?
Oh.
What do you think of the I'm sorry. I had a asthma thing there.
Burchell Miller, both guys really like to come forward and bang. And both guys, are vulnerable, which always makes for a great fight. And both guys are known to be high-volume guys. Burchelt's a slightly rangier, and he can kind of box off the back foot, a little bit. Takashi Miura only comes forward, wings body punches, wings head shots. The thing about Burchelt is Burchelt will take advantage of the openings that you present. But it's not like he can't be lured into a brawl. I think by nature prefers to come forward and attack. So, that's just going to be a tremendous action fight. You got to slightly favor Burchelt because he's, kind of the younger, fresher guy with less miles on him. But in this kind of fight, these are career stealing fights. Anything can happen in a fight like this.
Z, what do you think about the Chris Eubanks and Arthur Abraham tonight?
It's interesting because I came across an article. I didn't read it, but I just kind of glanced across the title, and it kind of summed it up for me. I just kind of looked at the title. I was like, yeah. And it was called Two Ships Passing. And that's kind of literally what this is. Arthur Abraham is on almost the bottom slope of his downside of his career. And Eubanks. It's interesting because, of course this fight is supposed to tell more about Eubanks than Abraham, but I don't really think it will. I don't really think it does. Just Abraham's style just doesn't lend to anything really interesting. The most he could do is put Eubanks to sleep by not doing a lot, and maybe opening up and catching him blindly. Abraham is experienced, but it doesn't seem that he uses that as much as he should. If Abraham begins to open up, maybe, you know, he feels, well, if, you know what, you Mac is too young, too live, too active for Abraham to even catch really solid at this point, in my. So,
you know, and what you said is very accurate. You know that Eubank is too young and too athletic and too active, right? But that's all we know about Eubank at this point. We know he has some boxing skills, but we really don't know how good he is. We know he lost a very, you know, kind of controversial majority decision to BJ Saunders early in his career. But since then, Eubank hasn't been in with anyone relatively kind of close to that level. So the one thing the Abraham fight presents him with is somebody who's at least performed at that level. The question is, though, is what is Abraham fighting? What does he have left now? And so when Zito makes the point that it's supposed to tell us a lot about Chris Eubank, but he doesn't think it will, the part of the reason for that is because Abraham doesn't bring the same attributes to the table that he used to. A prime refresher, Abraham, even at 168, the guy that lost to Durrell, he could answer some questions for us about Chris Eubank. Don't know if this Arthur Abraham is capable of doing that. And with that said, the great thing about this fight is like an eliminator for the World Boxing Super Series. So the winner of this fight moves on and fights in that tournament. And in that tournament is also Jamie Cox, George Groves. So if Eubank were to go ahead and beat Abraham, then within a couple of fights, he could be in line for a credible title shot against a credible opponent. So the questions that may not get answered tonight, unless he loses. If he loses, then hell, damn it, our questions get answered. But the questions that may not get answered tonight could very well be answered very shortly.
See?
Well, if he loses, it'll be interesting to see Abraham in another boxing tournament.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, I mean, but, right now is Chris Eubank's growing up time. This is growing up period. And, he's been talking a lot. Him and his father have been talking a lot. And they've been pretty confident. You can see, you know, reasons why. Not competition-wise, but you can see the skill and the talent-wise. When you enter those tournaments, though, you have to be prepared for everything. And we have a prime example with that Super Six tournament that happened a few years ago, and you see that Andre Ward won it. Andre Ward was physically the most the least skilled guy coming into the Super Six tournament. He wasn't the fastest, wasn't the strongest. But,
and he was one of, outside of Durrell, he was far and away the least experienced.
Exactly, with the least experience. So now, you know, with that, it's something that Chris Eubank, I mean, he might have it. I mean, outside of transgressing his game to a further ability, Andre Ward really picked his game up. He didn't change his game. He did what Andre Ward always did through his career. He just picked it up to another level. If Eubank can do that, then I have all the confidence that he's going to be a great fighter. With that said, I anticipate him winning this fight, but he's going into a tournament where they're dogs, and I'm not sure if he's still a pup.
Well, the one thing about this Super Six, it's not as stacked as the original Super Six. They're not the level of competition, not the level of star power, but just not the level of talent that was in the original Super Six. But the thing about, you know, Chris Eubank is, again, we know guys that pass the eye test, but it's all about what happens when you're in there with a guy who can take your best and give him and turn around and give you his best. And what's interesting about this to me is that Chris Eubank was in that, you know, he's fighting at 160. The reason why he took the 168 pound shot is because it was a fight. It was a chance at a you know, a kind of a minor world title belt. He took it, he won the belt, and now he finds himself in a tournament at 168. So is I guess this is it. He's campaigning at 168, or will he still eventually, especially if a loss happens, say, well, you know what, I was fighting above, you know, 160 anyway, I'm a natural 160-pounder. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops and where this moves him in his career and how this, you know, continues to build this Eubank legacy that his father started all those years ago.
Yeah, and he seems he can fit into 168 pretty good. He's a big 160er.
Yeah, he's a big. I always said that he was a big 160er. So,
yeah, very easily become a victim of his own success.
But yeah, he's a big, you know, physically athletic, gifted 160er. He has some holes in his game. What he does do though is he's a fighter. You know. Like he likes a good tear up, and you can see that in him. And so it's just going to be interesting to see. You know, one thing he said that I really liked is he said, you know what, I recognize that I am only going to get better. I'm 27 years old. He goes, I am at the beginning of my prime. He goes, wait till you see me in 2 years. He goes, because I know I'm still developing. I know I have to develop certain things. And, you know, that recognition of your weakness is always a person's, you know, one of their greatest strengths, because once you recognize that weakness, you can address it. And it seems like that's what he's trying to do. The thing about Chris Eubank is that, you know, the Eubanks have known to be a little hard-headed, and he always, you know, he really doesn't have, like, that consistent trainer. So, you know, eventually could that come back and bite him in his ass? We'll see. But, you know, if his head's in the game, you never know what he could do.
The Eubanks have been fighters at heart. You hit them, mm-hmm. they want to hit you back. And sometimes they'll sacrifice form for that. One thing I'll say, though, is, Junior, he's a good pack. He's a very
he's
good pack.
He's thoroughbred, man. Physically, that's the kid's a thoroughbred.
Oh, yeah. He has the skills to become champ at 160 or 168. It would be interesting to see him to keep campaigning at 160 to eventually maybe face Golovkin.
You know what? It's funny because obviously we know he barked the Golovkin bark before and didn't sign a contract. You know, I don't know if he has the skills. That's the one thing where I kind of disagree with you. I don't know if he has the skills to be champion. I don't know if he has the skills to beat Arthur Abraham just yet. You know what I mean? Because I just haven't seen him against anyone reasonably close to that level. So
more
I think,
potential skills.
But yeah, he has the athleticism, you know what I mean? As far as how he develops, he shows me courage under fire, but as far as how he actually is fundamentally, skillfully, I mean, you know, the rumor is that he could take a good shot, but is that rumor more so because his father was known to take a tremendous shot? Can a kid take a shot? You know what I mean? Because that could make all the difference in the world. So there are certain things that I still need to see. I know he has power. He doesn't have, you know, the one-punch kill switch. He doesn't have Amir Mansour power, the one-punch knockout, right? But he's got good power. But, you know, whether he can be a champion, I don't know. Can he be a titleist? Maybe. Well, he's already a titleist, you know what I mean? But as far as being that guy, I don't know. I think, you know, that's what's so important about the Arthur Abraham fight. In spite of where Arthur Abraham is at this point in his career, this will still be, you know, one of the top two to three best opponents that Eubanks faced, by far the most experienced guy, by far, you know, the guy with the biggest resume. So if nothing else, you know, even if it doesn't, like you said, Zito, and like I kind of, you know, potentially agree with you that it may not really tell us a lot about Eubank, it's the kind of fight that a Eubank needs to grow. You need that experienced veteran in there, that former title, that grizzled veteran. This is the first one. He hasn't had that.
And not only that, it's a fight who could define who he is. Because when you're going into just stepping up to competition, that defines who you are. I mean, even with Andre Berto as an example. I remember, I love Andre Berto coming up. He always had that potential, and he seemed to be steadily increasing with that potential. It just when he, you know, got to that level of competition, it seemed that he, you know, he kind of stopped going toward the skill and started going more toward the physical. And, is Eubank going to, you know, can that happen in Eubank? That happens to a lot of fighters when they get to that competition. Andre Ward got to that competition, and he increased his skill level. So it is within, you know, how is that going to go? How is this going to define Eubank moving forward?
Yeah. Like, all these guys are, you know, all these guys are tremendous boxers in their own right, you know, and skilled and fundamentally sound and, you know, have athleticism in their own right. But, like, I think one of the truest things that could be said about boxing is that there are levels to this game now.
Huh.
And it's just a matter of what level do you kind of plateau at, you know. And it's funny because Berto is a perfect example of a guy who, you know, became a titleist, definitely had, you know, passed the eye test. But there are levels to this game. And, you know, there are levels to this game. And that's just what it comes down to.
Hey, guys, we're joined by the illustrious Dr. Chris.
Yo. So, how you doing, guys?
Hey.
I hear you talking about Andre Berto. You know, the first time I saw him, he was a middleweight, fighting at 155.
Yeah.
And I said, he's too short. His arm is too short. He's not going to make it as a middleweight. And I think when he dropped down the welter, I think it took away a little bit of his power. He had a lot more power at 54, 55 when he was younger. And then he just became a better than mediocre welterweight. That's all, you know. So I'm sitting up here with you guys. It's nice and beautiful out tonight.
Oh,
nice,
isn't it?
Sunny.
Oh, yeah.
80
oh,
degrees. The wind's
yeah.
blowing. I mean, beautiful
yeah.
breeze. I just fed the cats, the deer, and about 8 million blue jays. Jesus. I'm up here. They eat like pigs. Birds eat like pigs. It costs us a fortune to feed these damn things. They eat 24 hours a day without stopping.
Wow.
So anyway. So what do you think of the Kovalev fight? I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys. What do you think? How bad he looked against Ward, I thought. Anyway. Did we talk about this last week?
No, I think we did.
No? I thought he looked awful. I thought he looked
mm-hmm.
awful. I gave him an F, you know? I don't think
mm-hmm.
he did
you know,
good at all. I thought
yeah,
his
I
boxing
mean,
skills were terrible.
Yeah.
Right hand stunk, you know? So I thought the ref
mm-hmm.
fight to stop too early, too. Stop the fight too damn early.
Yeah, I
they
thought he
could have
given him a standard knee count.
You know?
Well,
yeah,
yeah
I don't understand
actually,
that either.
From what
why
I heard,
the hell?
Because they've actually, their standing eight count really doesn't exist anymore in boxing from what was said and what I was reading. They said what could have been called was just a knockdown because the ropes were holding him up. He was sitting on the ropes. So
mm-hmm.
you kind of could have called it, if anything, you just kind of call a knockdown. You give him a mandatory eight count. So it wouldn't be the standing eight count, but it'd be ruled a knockdown and the mandatory eight count, which he could have done. You know what, the fact of the matter is that Kovalev kind of, he was quitting. He was
yeah.
he was capitulating. He was completely capitulating. And in real time, at the time of the stoppage, I didn't think it was a bad stoppage. Obviously, you know, hindsight's 20/20, and you definitely could have called a knockdown. And as I was watching it, I thought he was going to call a knockdown when he stepped in. But when he stopped it, I understood that. And the reason why I understood that is because Kovalev had completely stopped, intelligently defended himself. And he was looking for the referee to save him. And it's kind of not what you would expect from Kovalev. And, you know, I think that's the other thing, too. When you look at the story of the fight, the guy who was the bully, the guy who went in there and said, I don't like him, I'm going to end Andre Ward's career, is the guy who's holding his gut, sitting on the ropes, waiting for the referee to step in and say,
yeah, all mouth.
And,
all mouth.
Yeah, exactly, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
So
I thought he's disappointed. He's supposed to be such a tough guy. He was looking for the exit door in the sixth round. He didn't want to fight anymore.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed. And you know what? He should have gone out on his behind. Should have gotten knocked down a couple of times. Would have done some good. Wake him the hell up. The public pays all that money for a fight, and then the ref's afraid to have a knockdown. He wasn't caught.
Yeah.
He wasn't hurt. It was a couple of body punches. Let him go down.
He was hurt.
Do him good.
He
got
hurt.
Caught with that right hand a little earlier, but you know, if he's so damn tough,
he wasn't hurt, but he was hurting. it was hurting.
It hurt.
Yeah.
I think he was out of shape for the fight. I didn't like his conditioning.
I think he comes in the ring so wound up and so tight that he's just not relaxed, and he blows so much energy just being tight, Dr. Chris. Like, he's just not relaxed
at all. Could be
George
Foreman did that as a young man. He'd come in tense, and his muscles were tense, and he couldn't fight. He was a better fighter when he was older because he could relax.
We didn't see that in Kovalev. And we've seen Kovalev go 12 against Hopkins. We've seen Kovalev get 12 against Chalimba. You know, he went 6 or 7 or 8 against Pascal. But when he had a guy pushing back at him, you know what I mean, and making him work every minute and not giving him anything, he wilted. And that's just, like, really what happened. He wilted. And it's the same thing kind of happened the first fight. It just happened later. But he started to just kind of unravel, even though
he coasted.
Right.
He coasted his way to a loss.
Maybe it was last week we talked about it. I don't know, but I do remember.
I think we did talk about it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember saying that Andre Ward. All this was a continuation of the first fight. Literally, it was Andre Ward's game plan. And it seemed it was the acquiring damage on Kovalev's body. Andre Ward, as I equated to Tim Bradley, these guys, they can't kill a fly sitting on your face if they punched you as hard as they could.
Yeah.
But let these guys go to your body.
Lamont Peterson is another one.
Lamont Peterson is another one.
Not a big punch to the face, but God, he could dig to the body.
And that's what I mean. These guys, they'll kill you to the body. And one thing I did kind of see in the first fight is that Kovalev reacts to body shots. He reacts not positive, and he'll scoot his lower side out while throwing the jab, sort of in a keep away motion. And
the body shots actually take away from his jab. They really do. Because now he's not stepping through trying to penetrate anymore. Yeah, you're right.
Exactly. And you could see in the second fight, as time went on, Kovalev, you know, they could say the judges said he was winning. Okay, it's fine on points because all he was doing was jabbing, keep away. And Andre kind of didn't mind that because he knew, first of all, for Kovalev to even throw that right, he would have to plant on those feet. That would sacrifice positioning as far as Andre's concerned, because as soon as Kovalev, that's what Andre was waiting for. So as soon as he plants his feet, I'm stepping in on him. And Kovalev, it got to the point to where Kovalev didn't even plant his feet anymore. He started fighting scared. So, I mean, that was just a continuation.
You know what, Kovalev doesn't ride body shots at all. Like, he doesn't get his elbows down and ride body shots at all. Like, they hit him clean. You know what I mean? That's one thing I kind of noticed. And Kovalev, because he has really good timing, he has a very good jab, and, you know, he has a very powerful straight right hand, and, he changes the kind of the velocity and the variation. He variates, his hand. But with that being said, he still comes from, in a sense, still comes from that stand-up European style.
Yeah.
And he lacks great feet. But what he doesn't do is he doesn't really move at the waist or bend at the waist as much. And so the body shots come in, he's very straight up, and he doesn't ride with them, but he never gets his elbows down on body shots at all.
And he doesn't
you could see Andre Ward catching body shots on the elbow, like a lot of times that fight when Kovalev would try to hit to the body.
And Kovalev, his defense is all in the feet.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah.
in the feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either he's in or out. And anything different is either in or out.
Hey, guys, we're joined by 23-2-1, Mr. Amir Mansour. Amir, how are you tonight?
How y'all doing, man?
We're doing great. It's great to have you back on the program. We talk to you in the almost the infancy of your new career. Frankie Philippone had worked out with you and had fought on cards with you. And Frankie is a police officer down in Newport News.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wanted everybody to hear the story that you're, when you were given lemons, you made lemonade. It's not always been an upward, it has always been an upward battle with you, but you've certainly gone over that mountain, and he wanted everybody to know how proud he is of you.
Well, tell him I said thank you, man.
I will. And Stevie had some, I talked to Stevie today, Stevie had some other nice things to say about you. Stevie Cunningham.
Yeah, that's my man.
Yeah. So, I guess one
that's a hell of a fight.
Yes,
oh
it was.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it was. You want to go in that one?
Are you signed up yet to fight anybody?
As of right now, no. Right now, not at all. And of course,
Chris,
I'm not saying that.
Chris, Russell Peltz had gotten a note from somebody that handled a certain Russian fighter, and they said if he ever got nationally ranked, that they would take a fight with him in a minute. So it was October 1st. You were named WBA number 15, right?
WBA.
WBO. Sure.
You know, when it comes to the rankings, you guys are wise enough to know that, you know, often all it takes is a phone call, man. You know, especially when you got a guy with a record like mine has won every single junior title that every single organization has to offer, you know, it's not really difficult at all to get ranked. And so, yeah, we was going to – They were talking about me and Povetkin fighting for July, and of course, once we got the ranking, you know, he backed out, you know.
What I don't understand, Amir, is you fought and you beat Travis Kaufman, and we were supposed to be somewhat of an eliminator, right? And after the fight, you're ranked number 15, and then because of inactivity, they drop you to 21, but the inactivity we're talking is like 3 months. So, like, what is their justification? What was their justification in doing such, I guess, is the question.
There is no justification. I mean, once again, man, you know, what more can, you know, we say about whatever they do to go about, you know, their rankings, you know? The United States of America WBC champ, right? I win that title and you still got four or five American heavyweights ranked higher than me that has never won a title in their life. So, you know, when it comes to the rankings, man, I really don't pay it any mind at all. I mean, why should I win? They really don't matter, man, unless they rank you number one or unless they make you a mandatory. You know, the rankings really don't even matter. I mean, if you talk about inactivity, look at Severn. Has Severn fought since he lost the title?
Exactly.
And here he is, a mandatory for Wilder, allegedly. Supposed to be a Wilder's mandatory. He's definitely ranked number one, right? So when it comes to stuff like that, man, I can't even waste my energy trying to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah. You remember Jose Suleiman? You could get ranked for a certain price. Depending on how high you wanted to get ranked. The price got higher, that's all.
And if you were Mexican? If you were Mexican?
Don King and him took care of things. The guy... You never heard of a guy, all of a sudden he's ranked number four. So who is this guy? I never saw him, never heard of him. Suleiman. And he charged $50,000 to sanction a bout. And for a title bout, it was $150,000 he wanted. And he used to get it. These King said he was giving it to him. I don't know how true that is. But it's a promotional scam, the rankings now. The old Ring magazine... From 50, 60, 70 years ago, it was you earned your ranking. You got there through winning a certain number of fights, and you just didn't pull any crap on promoters in those days. Those days are over now. Ring Magazine doesn't hold any status anymore. It doesn't sell like it used to, and the rankings don't seem to matter anymore. You know, they do what the hell they want to do. So I feel the same way you do. You know, why waste your energy even thinking about it? Damn rankings.
And we were talking earlier about being a victim of your own success, to where your knockout on Fred Cassidy should have been knockout of the year, and you went ahead and basically outboxed Travis Coughlin to win. So, you know, guys may be looking at you, you know, a little skeptical. What do you think about that?
We got to call him back. That's what this all this chiming's about. They got somehow he lost his connection. I'll get him right back on.
Yeah, like it's fun. The one thing is, I mean, obviously he's a southpaw heavyweight who hits hard, and you know he's a 44-year-old man who is very dangerous. But to the general public, if you lose to him, you know what I mean? Like, if you're Deontay Wilder, that's a great risk to you because this is a guy.
Okay, guys, we have Amir back.
Hey,
sorry about that, gentlemen.
That's okay. Vito, you had a question, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I was talking, we were talking earlier, Amir, about being a victim of your own success. And like I said, I think that your knockout over Fred Cassidy should have been knockout of the year. And then you went ahead and outbacked Travis Coughlin to win a decision. So guys may be a little leery of you and skeptical to fight you. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that's the obvious reason, you know. I mean, we did get knocked out of the year, by the way, Sports Illustrated, you know, and a lot of other publications, but I guess the people that it really mattered didn't give it to us. But having said that, you're right. I mean, I knocked Fred Cassidy out in that type of fashion, dominating him throughout the fight.
Yeah.
His next fight is a bigger fight than mine.
Yeah, how about that?
Exactly.
He goes to fight Areola.
He goes exactly. to make, you know, he goes and get a check that I can only dream about getting. You understand what I'm saying? Then Areola fights Travis Coughlin. We know the end result on that. And then Areola goes off and fights Wilder. Washington goes and fight Wilder.
That's Bob, exactly.
That, you know, I got a draw with him, but I mean, an honest boxing, you know, fan would definitely say I won that fight, but it was a draw, whatever. And then he goes on to fight Wilder. And then you look at Wilder's last few opponents, you know, none of them, in my opinion, meets the criteria that I've met. You know, I've won the WBO, NABO titles, WBA, NABA title, WBC, USA title, IBF, USBA title, WBF, Intercontinental title, and Continental title. I mean, you know, sometimes they say you're too good for your own good. You know what I mean? But, you know, here I am turning 45 this month, and these dudes are still ducking me. I got some of the highest ratings than any heavyweight when it comes to being showcased on TV. When I fought Brazil, Fox Sports told me that I had the highest ratings of any PBC fighter that they ever put on Fox Sports. At the time that me and Washington fought, they had got the highest ratings that they ever got with any PBC fight. That includes championship fights and all the Broners and, you know, the Wilders that were on that channel before me. And so, you know, nobody can say, you know, nobody wants to see this guy fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I get more people. When I fought Brazil, they told us that the ratings skyrocketed, and then they went back down for the main event. People love seeing me fight because they know that when I fight, I'm going to give it my all. Win, lose, or draw. You know, Wilder, you know, they had the fight, man. They had the fight made for him and Coughlin. Had Coughlin won, you know. And of course, the fight was billed as, you know, elimination bout. The fight was billed, you know, journey to the championship. the fight was billed as, you know, winner gets Wilder. And then the minute I win, you know, Wilder, he don't even want to answer a question concerning Amir Mansour.
Well, and then what makes it even worse is then he goes and fights the guy that Travis Coffin had just beaten, Chris Ariola.
Exactly. Exactly. And like I said, you know, I dominate Cassie. He goes fight Chris Ariola, gets a draw. Honest person today, you know, he won that fight hands down. You know.
Oh, yeah.
It just don't make no sense, man. And then, you know, Gerald Washington, in my opinion, he was winning the fight, and that was an early stoppage, you know. You know, Wilder can crack, and I was gaining respect for him, you know, because I was seeing some things, you know, from a fighter to a fighter. I was seeing some things in him, you know, his last few fights. But when it comes to him really fighting, you know, tough opposition, you know, he's shown me that, you know, he's not going to do that. He's going to take the easy way out as long as he can. And, you know, from a business aspect, you know, you got to respect some of those decisions to do that. But at the same time, if you're going to be the reigning champion, you have to fight tough competition. And that's one of the reasons why the heavyweight division is no longer the popular division anymore. I mean, come on, man. This is the first decade that the heavyweight division has not been the popular division. This is the first decade since the history of boxing, the beginning of boxing, that the heavyweight division is no longer the top dog, you know. And it's sad, but the reason why is because the best are no longer fighting the best. Everybody wants to fight a duck or a truck driver and then end up getting a title shot. And lo and behold, it's working for a lot of guys. When you're not that good and you don't pose a big threat, you get a title shot. You get the big payday.
Yeah.
But when you're doing everything that you're supposed to do as a fighter, you're getting thrown to the wayside, man. It's just sad. It really is, man. It's disappointing, man.
All you can do is win.
All you can do is win, man. And just
once
trying
you
to
become a dangerous opponent, everything changes. You don't get the easy fights anymore. They throw Ariola in after they know he's not a dangerous opponent. Well, you would be a dangerous opponent, so they give it to Ariola. It's a promoter's way of making money for a longer period of time. That's all. We all know, you know, what the truth is. You know, you're a dangerous opponent. So, you know, why the hell fight if you pick an easy guy to beat for the same money almost? So that's the sad part of it.
I've really been contemplating, man, maybe I should go the Lennox Lewis route, man, and take these guys to court, man. You know, he was successful in getting these guys to fight him, man. You know, I mean, it's just a sad state, man. But I'll tell you this much. You know, if a promoter is using his knowledge of this game, if he's using common sense, you know, he's going to start making the best fight the best when it comes to the heavyweight division. We're seeing it in the smaller weight classes, and that's why these guys are making multi-millions of dollars, you know. And then we're seeing heavyweight championship fights, not even pay-per-view worthy. What, when Klitschko and David Haye fought each other, this was two world champions. That should have been a big mega fight, a pay-per-view fight. I don't even think HBO aired it, or they didn't even want to air it, you know. And that just tells you and shows you what sad state that the heavyweight division is in. And it's only in that state because they're not making the best fight the best.
You're right. You can't argue with it.
Because there's a lot of talent out here, guys. You know, I'm not the only fighter that would pose a threat to Wilder, you know. I honestly think in the rematch, Washington, if he toughens up some, could beat Wilder, you know. It's a lot of talent out here. It's a lot of guys out here who are talented. I'm not the only talented heavyweight on the planet. I'm just one of the very few that are being denied an opportunity to fight for the championship of the world, you know, and the opportunity to really, you know, get big fights.
Amir, I know you'll definitely fight this guy, absolutely. But what do you think about Anthony Joshua?
I like Joshua. I like him not only as a boxer, I like him as a person, too. He actually reached out to me a couple of times on Instagram for a little bit of advice when he faced Charles Martin in Brazil. But at the same time, I'm hoping that he doesn't get into that mode where he's babysitting the title. Also, I don't know if Klitschko gave us something out of the tank that we didn't know was there anymore, or if Joshua is just that less of a fighter than we thought he was and maybe a big hype. I don't know. You know, on one hand, I feel as though Klitschko exposed him terribly because I honestly thought that he would be Klitschko would be an easy night for him. But at the same time, you know, maybe Klitschko, you know, pulled back some strength from his earlier years and gave us something that we thought was gone. We all know that Klitschko is a very talented fighter. Yeah. I mean, you know, he came up in the era, man, where the best had to fight the best. And so I you know, on one hand, I can't knock him for babysitting the title all those years. On the other hand, maybe that doing that took away a lot of his fight game. And then losing the title may have gave him back some of that energy and hunger, you know, and the will to really win and will to really work hard and train hard and really want to win a fight. And I think he did step his game up for Joshua. Because he certainly wasn't the Klitschko we saw in his last three or four fights. So, in a nutshell, gentlemen, I don't know if Anthony Joshua was exposed by Klitschko or if he took Klitschko for granted. I don't know, man. I will say that I do believe that that was a good fight for the division. I really do, especially with the fight turning out the way that it did, unfolding the way that it did. You know, those guys, it was a good fight. You got to give it to them. It was a good heavyweight fight. And that's how the heavyweight fight should be moving forward, man. Challenging, energetic, you know, knockdowns, knockouts. You know, that's what the big guys are supposed to get in there and do.
Hey, Amir, who's the... Who's handling you now?
Johan is my manager, great guy, you know, and you know, I know that it could be a question of, you know, man, who's managing this guy? He should have got a shot by now, but I can tell you this man gets out of his bed 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning for me, man, on the weekends. You understand what I'm saying? He really does. He really does. And Russell Peltz, you know, works as a promoter, you know, and he's working in conjunction with Mr. Hand. And I'm telling you, man, it's not a phone that has not been rung when it comes to trying to get me in a position for a big fight. These guys literally make excuses why they don't want to fight me. And the sad part about it is you can't say – oh, nobody wants to see that. You can't say that anymore. You can't say he hasn't won enough fights. You can't say he hasn't done enough as a fighter. They're literally just straight up, flat out, turning me down. And the only obvious reason is that I pose too much of a threat.
I think you're exactly right. Exactly right. Like I just said, you're a dangerous opponent now, Amir. Can't take you lightly. You have to get in there and train, and you know it's going to be a tough fight. A lot of guys aren't willing to do that. So Johan is trying hard for you, then, huh?
Man, he's trying.
He's been around long enough. He's been around a long time.
For sure. Yes, for sure. He's trying very hard, and Russell Peltz is doing his best as well, man. I mean, you know. Like I said, there's not a phone that hasn't been rung, man, that Russell hasn't been on the line with people. And you know, they contacted us, like I said, with Povetkin, and their only worry was the rankings. Okay, You want us to get him ranked, we'll get him ranked. And there was the rank and done and over with, and Povetkin still wins. And now here's a fighter that I shouldn't even be willing to go overseas and fight, you know.
For real.
When you know, he's been, you know, I don't know what he's been using. I don't like talking bad about any fighter. You know, everybody's warriors, in my opinion, and I wish every fighter out there the best. But, you know, considering his situations a few times, he should be the last person I should be willing to fight. But I am Amir Hardcore Mansoor, man, and I don't take my name lightly. I don't take this game lightly. I am dead serious about this boxing thing. When I say I will fight anyone. And so when that opportunity came, I did not hesitate to say, let's do it. And, of course, you know, at the end of the day, he didn't want to see me, man.
A hard-hitting southpaw heavyweight.
I tell you, one guy, one heavyweight that might be that I can honestly say he hasn't turned down a fight with me, and we were going to fight on two different occasions, and that's Luis Ortiz. And, yeah, number one and number two best southpaws on the planet. And and they do have me ranked as number two, and of course I would like to be number one. And me and Luis were going to fight prior to me fighting Gerald Washington, but that fight didn't pan out, and then the fight with Washington came up, and I took it and ran. And then me and Luis were going to fight over in Monte Carlo when he just fought Malik Scott. Would you guys believe that the Las Vegas, Nevada commission would not approve the fight?
What?
Why?
They said I was too old, gentlemen. Can you believe that?
Come on, man.
They said what?
Swear to God, man. That was their reason. And I
oh, you fucking kidding me, man.
When you think about them disallowing a Bernard Hopkins to come out to California and fight 50-something years old. You know, what is Bernard, 52? I think he probably stole a year or so from us, so he's probably about 53. And they tell, you know, a guy who, if you stand me next to the top 20 heavyweights in the world, not just America, the world, you stand me next to us, line us up, and you don't tell anybody our age, I probably would be, you know, one of the five youngest out of the 20, you know, if you don't tell nobody our age. You know, in terms of conditioning, in terms of speed, you know, I don't slur when I talk. I think I'm articulate and intelligent guy, you know. And I always tell my people, man, I say, listen, if you feel as though I'm slowing down and getting old and I might get hurt if I go out there, please tell me. Because I, you know, I feel as though I'm intelligent enough to walk away from this sport and find some other things for my mind and my body to do rather than end up as a vegetable. And so, yeah, so Luis Ortiz did not turn me down. As a fighter, you know, things just didn't work out. And so, you know, I did have my people reach out to some people to try and make the fight with Luis Ortiz. We're still waiting for an answer. I would love to fight him, man. I think that fight right there, beating Luis Ortiz, I could definitely take him to court then.
I think Luis might be trying to take him to court pretty soon. So,
yeah,
exactly. And you know, I like Luis Ortiz. I think he's an amazing fighter. You know, especially considering his age. You know, and he's not no damn 37, 38. That brother is about 47. And let me. You know, I'm not even going to put that out there, but I can guarantee you he's older than me at least by 3 years. I can guarantee you that. So, you know, I feel like that would be a great fight, him and I. You know, I feel as though that would be a great fight, and it would be a fight that I know for the most part I probably would come in the underdog. I understand that. You know, I have blemishes on my record. He don't. And I think that would be a great fight. I would love for that fight to happen, you know. So, I'm still waiting for that, man, and I hope, you know, both sides can work something out and me and, Ortiz get it on, man, if I can't get the fight with Deontay.
Have you ever tried to get Dominic Brazil back in the ring? Because you got some unfinished business. You were well ahead on the cards that knocked him down. And then you had a horrific injury. And it's funny because Dr. Chris was the dentist, and he talks about your injury all the time on the show and just how difficult it was to breathe. Have you ever thought about trying to get him back in the ring?
I think I immediately tried to do that, immediately. But then, of course, you know, I couldn't be mad at the guy for going to fight Joshua instead, you know. Man, 20 minutes after that fight, you know, I could barely talk, but I was asking for the rematch, man. But I can promise you guys, that dude, no, he will never get in that ring with me again. He will never get in that ring with me.
I don't think so.
Ever, you know. That was heartbreaking, guys. That was heartbreaking. Yeah. But you know what? It was more heartbreaking to see him go on and fight for the heavyweight championship of the world. And then people were asking me, hey, if you won that fight, do you think you would have got the fight with Joshua? And in retrospect, you know, my answer was, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, I don't know. Yeah. But now I think it's clear to say, no, I wouldn't have got that shot because another fight with Kaufman. The winner supposed to got a shot at the title. The winner supposed to got Wilder. And lo and behold, you know, Wilder won't even answer a question when you mention my name. He's that afraid of me.
Samir, of the last four fighters that you had fought, Kaufman, Brazier, Washington, Cassis, which was the toughest fight for you?
Washington. That joker is very strong. Washington was the toughest fight. Out of Brazil, Washington, Kaufman, Washington was. He was the toughest because he just was so strong. He's athletic. His strength was a major, major surprise to me. He's very, very strong, man. And that was, I would say, Washington.
Good, Ty. Did you have one?
You can feel that strength right away when you have your first clinch. You notice? You can feel that strength. Some guys are different than others. Some guys don't feel like anything in a clinch. Other guys feel so damn strong, and you know you're in for a rough night. You know?
Yeah.
You can tell immediately who the hell the stronger fighter, you know?
Yeah.
It does affect you, too, mentally. You say, damn, I better, you know, I don't have much margin of error here with this guy.
Hey, Amir, what weight are you feeling comfortable coming into the ring at? Like, we've noticed you come in, you know, at your muscular self at you know, 223, 224. We've also seen, you know, a slimmed down version of you at 210.
Mm-hmm.
What feels most comfortable? Where do you feel you're most effective at?
Honestly, between 218 and 220, I feel most effective at that weight right there, almost precisely at that weight.
What made you go down so low?
Excuse me?
I said, what made you go down so low at that one point?
Against what, the Waco?
Yeah, when you got down to 210.
Actually, guys, I was 198. I drunk like a gallon and a half.
Whoa.
I kid you not, right before weigh-in, man. I was 198. I'm dead.
What got you so low, man? You just don't even seem like you have the musculature to get that low.
Well, what happened was I didn't intend to get down that low. About 2 weeks before the DeWaco fight, no, about 3 weeks before the DeWaco fight, I caught food poisoning.
That explains a lot.
I caught food poisoning. Let me tell you something. It was like a 98.9% chance that fight was not going to happen. And I was sick as a dog, man, for about 2 weeks. I couldn't keep nothing down. You know, I was sweating profusely, and I already sweat a lot. And I weight was just falling off of me. And at the same time, I could not stop training because, you know, I had to fight, you know. And so I was trying to work through that sickness. And at the same time, I mean, I'm telling you, literally going to the gym, a serious workout, sparring 10, 12 rounds, and not eating nothing that whole day. Just drinking fluids, drinking protein shakes. Anything I ate would just come up. And so that's really what happened with the DeWaco fight. That's why I went down that low, man. I was sick as a dog.
Yeah, man, we were surprised when we saw the weigh-in and then saw just how small you were when you came in the ring. We were just like, that's a little small for a mirror, man. You know what I mean? So we were wondering if you were trying something different, working on speed or what. We just
No. I mean, I'm already a fast heavyweight. You know what I mean? I don't have to break down that low, you know, to get a speed advantage. I mean, DeWaco, believe it or not, he's very fast. His size is very deceptive. His frame, matter of fact, his body shape is very, very deceptive. That
he's a crafty guy, though, man.
So
he is a crafty guy.
Yeah. And he is very, very crafty. He can fight.
Yeah.
I like DeWaco.
Yeah, he can. I like him a lot, too, man. He can. He can fight.
Yeah. And he can crack. Let me tell you something. That boy can crack. You understand? He can crack, you know. But he suffered the same fate that Coffin did. Because DeWaco sparred with me before. And after the first round, I come back and my trainer goes, listen, don't hit him in the head no more. Just go to his body and work on this and work on that and work on this. So after a few rounds in DeWaco's mind, he felt like he beat me up. And so he thought, you know, that he had an easy win. Same thing with Kaufman. And one of the things Kaufman kept saying was, you know, I beat you in sparring. I beat you up. I beat you up. And a lot of guys don't know, you know, I'm nowhere near as great as Muhammad Ali, but I don't spar to win. I spar to learn.
Yeah, you spar. You're working on stuff.
So,
you're sparring.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So a guy might come in and feel like he whooped my ass sparring, but he doesn't realize he's going to get a totally different person, you know, in a fight.
That's because what happens, the guy's coming in, he's competing against you. You're competing against yourself in sparring. Then when he steps in the ring, he finds out all of a sudden you're competing against him, and it's a different scenario altogether.
And that's absolutely true, because Travis Kaufman didn't realize that you had a jab as good as you did.
Exactly. And, I was doing things with him. I was doing things with him that a very close source of his told me it worked. Like, when I sparred Travis, I didn't show him my speed. And then when we were training for that fight, I was posting videos of me doing pad work, and I was punching real slow. And I got it from a reliable source that he was like, man, look, this guy's slow, man. He not fast.
Boy, oh, boy. He's falling for the banana and the tailpipe.
Exactly.
I
see stuff at all the time.
Good deal.
Hey, Amir, let me ask you a question. You know, looking at you now, you know what I mean? You started back up when you were 38, you're 44 now. Watching you in a ring, you look no different, literally. You know what I mean? Obviously, your game's kind of fine-tuned. You've gotten a little bit better fundamentally. But, I mean, just physically, you look no different. Your body looks like it had the same kind of body fat ratio. Your reflexes and speed look the same. Do you feel any different in the 6 years? Do you feel like you have to train differently? What's changed for you in those 6 years?
Honestly, I rest a lot more. Like, when I fought Kaufman, I probably was in one of the best conditions ever. And you know what I did, man? I kid you not. The days that I sparred, the next day, I wouldn't even go to the gym. I never had done that before. The very next day, I would not go to the gym, but I would go for a nice little run, 40, 50 minutes, and that's all I would do that entire day, and just rest all day. And mind you, guys, 2 days before the fight, they changed it from 10 rounds to 12. So I was
right.
The whole time, 10 rounds, not 12. And I just took it easy on my body. But the days that I did train, we went hard. I always exhausted myself the days that I did train. The days that I sparred, I exhausted myself. And when I tell you exhausted myself, I'm talking like living by the 40% rule, which is when you feel like you can't lift a finger, when you feel like you're about to pass out, scientifically, realistically, you still have 40 more percent that you can push out until you reach your max. And so we worked out by that rule every day that we did train. But I promise you guys, from Monday to Saturday, I would take off 2 days in between. So literally, you know, if we trained Monday and came in Tuesday and sparred, Wednesday I took off. I would just go for a nice light run. Then Thursday, come back, go hard. Friday, go hard. Saturday, rest all day, go for a little run. Sunday, I may, you know, do a little light workout. But, I mean, I just took it easy. I wasn't nowhere like a Rocky Balboa song playing in the background, you know, cutting logs and pulling, you know, cattle and all that.
That dude said pulling cattle.
You know, let me tell you guys, this sport, man, is 99% mental. It really, truly is, man. It. When I tell you, man, of course you got to work out. You got to condition your body to go that extra mile. But if you have the mentality of a warrior and you understand that even when you are totally depleted, totally exhausted, you still got 40 to 60 more percent left in you to push forward. When you really understand that concept and believe in it 100%, you know, sky's the limit when you're in the ring, man. It's a mental thing, man.
A mere years ago, there was an expression in boxing. He left his fight in the gym. And that happened to thousands of fighters. They think that the harder you train and you train every day hard, that's the best way to get in. That's not the best way. I got the shock of my life when a young light heavyweight was fighting Roland Astarza, who was the number one ranked heavyweight in the world, waiting for a shot at Marciano. He tapered off. The last week, he tapered off. He didn't spar. He didn't do anything. And, you know, he came in and beat Astarza. I mean, I thought he was going to get killed. I thought he's not in the shape to fight Astarza. But he knew how to taper off. He didn't spar.
Right.
The last 3 days, he didn't spar at all. You know, and just a little road work. And he said, you got to build your stamina. He said, you got to build your body back up. You have nothing in reserve if you go hard every day. So I understand what you're saying. You know, you have to back off a little bit. You just can't go in there every day and make it the hardest day of your life. You have nothing left when the fight comes. You know?
I'll give you a prime example, right? When I fought Brazil, right, we already know that October the 13th, me and Washington fought, right?
Yep.
Okay. I started camp at the end of July. A week after from the end of July to October the 13th, I'm in camp. October the 13th, I fight Washington. Fight goes the distance, 10 rounds. A week after, we made a fight with Spilka. A week after, man, Spilka was going to fight December the 12th.
Mm. Right back in camp.
Now, from a week after fighting Washington, right back in the camp. When Klitschko lost his title to Fury, the heavyweight division went in disarray. The whole card broke up. Charles Martin was on that card. I was on that card. Brazil was on that card. Spilka was on that card.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's how Brazil got the shot. That's right.
Yeah. So then Charles Martin, he went off the card and fought for the IBF title.
Yep.
And they moved that December 12th date to January the 6th. Mind you,
Martin was supposed
camp,
to fight Brazil. Right. Yes.
Martin fought the Russian. Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
then
he ended up fighting Zar Glaskov. You're right. That's right.
Exactly. So
yeah.
Now I'm in camp, guys. I'm supposed to fight now. They say, well, you'll fight Brazil the 12th. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm already in good shape. I never left camp, really, after the Washington fight. In my mind, you know, I'm in good shape. You know, I went right back to camp a week after me in Washington. Lo and behold, okay, you're in Brazil, not going to fight December the 12th. Do you want to fight Wilder January the 6th? Yeah, let's go. So Wilder had a choice, Spilker or Mansoor. Spilker wanted $750,000. Mansoor was willing to take the $350,000. Wilder said no to Mansoor and fought Spilker. Okay.
He chose
Spilky.
Oh, man.
So check this out. Then me and Brazil are supposed to fight January the 6th. I'm in camp. I'm still in camp, working hard, going hard. Then they moved me in Brazil from January the 6th to January the 23rd. So from the end of July, with the exception of a week after fighting Washington, Amir is in camp. When I fought Brazil, I fought like I was in the best condition of my life. But I'm going to tell you guys something. Mentally, I was worn out.
Wow.
Worn out. When I tell you worn out, I was worn out mentally. I was just exhausted mentally beyond my imagination. I still don't I can't even wrap my mind around the feeling that I had when I was in that ring. And then swallowing all that blood from the second ring. It was just crazy, man. But that goes to show, man, when you don't rest your body, even if you feel like you in great shape, once that bell ring, man, you could be in great physical shape and in terrible mental shape. And believe it or not, man, being in camp and sparring all those months, that's almost a six-month camp, man, with the exception of 1 week. I was mentally drained, man. I was just depleted, man. I was depleted. You hear me? And I had to drink a whole lot of water for the Brazil weigh-in. I think I weighed in at like 16 or 217. And be honest with you guys, I was only about 201, 202 for that fight, you know, because being in camp all those months, man, you know, just drink, man. And I said I'll never do that again, ever, ever. So now when they call me for a fight, I do not start really going hard until the contract is signed. I learned that lesson through that experience, you know, that six-month period. When I fought Washington in Brazil, man, because you can dog your body, man, and you can get up and go in the gym and go 12 rounds real easy and feel energetic afterwards, man. But when that bell ring and you in there and you fighting, man, everything can go wrong when you exhaust your body the way that I did leading up to the Brazil fight.
Yeah.
That's,
well,
you have
we
to live it. You learn the hard way.
Go ahead.
Oh, man.
Chris, you had a question?
Worst boxing day of my life, that Brazil fight, man. Worst boxing day of my life. You know?
Go ahead,
but,
Chris, you had a question?
Know,
what's that, Frank?
So did you have a question?
No, that's all right. That's all right. I'm listening to Amir. That's all right. I was just agreeing with him.
We're just letting him go because he's gone. He's been so kind. He's been on for a whole hour with us.
I don't mind, guys. You know, I know one thing, man. We need to make these champions fight true opposition, man. If we ever want to see the heavyweight division back in its glory days or back in its position of being the most favorable division. Come on, man. The heavyweight championship fight of the world, nothing surpassed that And the only thing that equaled that was the Super Bowl and the World mm-hmm. Series.
Yep.
You understand? Other than that, man, nothing was bigger than the heavyweight championship fight of the world. You know, here it is. You know, you would think that a guy, well, it's true. A guy at McDonald's makes almost double the amount that a guy at McDonald's made 15, 20 years ago, right?
True. Yeah.
This is McDonald's, right? Guys in D.C., Washington, D.C., they get $15 an hour working at McDonald's. That's minimum wage in Washington, D.C., where I'm at now. 20 years ago, they was making, what, about $4 an hour?
Yeah, yeah. $3.35.
Okay. So in boxing, in the heavyweight division, though, the heavyweight championship fight, the heavyweight championship bout of the world, these guys is making maybe 10% of what the heavyweight champion was making 10, 15, 20 years ago. Remember the paydays Mike Tyson and Holyfield and
Bowen? Oh, yeah, yeah.
Guys
would
get 20 million to fight, 30 million to fight, 40 million to fight. You know, a heavyweight champion today, I think maybe Wilder's biggest payday was 1.2 million.
Wow.
And he doesn't understand. Man, fight somebody that people want to see you fight, you're going to get a big paycheck. If they really promoted the fight with me and Wilder, that's an awesome payday. That's an awesome fight. That's a fight that people are going to tune in and watch. I already have the views to back up what I'm saying. You know, people tune in to watch me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how his views go, but I know that if my story and his story put together and we're going to meet for the heavyweight championship of the world, you can't go wrong with it. And these guys don't realize, yeah, you can keep nitpicking a million here, 800,000 there, 700,000 there, but you can go ahead and get a $20 million payday, you know, if you build yourself up and be the heavyweight champion that people came to love when they fell in love with Mike Tyson and Ali and Frazier. You know, and Holyfield and Bo and Lennox. You know, you get these paydays. You can get that stardom. You can rise to that plateau if you earn it. And these guys want to earn the heavyweight title, the heavyweight champion title of the world. They want to earn it without putting in that work. And one thing about boxing fans, you can't pull no wool over their eyes.
Yeah.
Boxing fans ain't going for that, man. And so now you've barely got people watching the heavyweight champions of the world, man. You've barely got people tuning in. The money's not there no more because true boxing fans ain't going for that, man. Not going.
Again, Amir, we want to thank you for giving us so much time. We appreciate it. We'll be watching your watching the Boxing Rec and Fight News to see when your next fight is. And before you have your next fight, we hope to have you on, and you can tell us what your thoughts are in the fights.
Well,
so,
I got your
again, we thank
in,
you very much.
Yeah, I got your number locked in, so as soon as I hear something, I'll let you guys know, man. And I thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate the support, man, and God willing, man, you guys will be successful over there doing what you're doing. You guys have a great show. I listen to you guys, and I appreciate you, man, to the fullest.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank
you,
sir.
Thank you very much, Amir.
All right, man. You guys take care, man. Keep representing
care,
the truth, man. That's how you win. Represent the truth, man. Thank y'all,
yes,
all right?
Sir.
Peace.
All right, y'all take care.
Okay, it was a darn good interview. He was only supposed to be on for 10 minutes when I talked to Bam.
Nice fella. Nice
he
fella.
Is. He is. Yeah, he's come a
makes
long,
a lot of
long
sense.
Way. He was in federal prison, and the guy took him under his arm, took him into a dark closet where he trained him. And ever since he's been on the street, he's been pretty much on the straight and narrow. And has made a name for himself in the sport. So, all right, well we're ready to close it out here.
Okay,
Chris,
guys.
Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
All right, enjoyed it.
Hey, thanks, Dr. Chris.
All right. Take it easy, see you guys next week, I guess. All right?
Yes, sir.
All right. See you guys.
Okay. Take care. Ty, you want to lead us out?
Yes, sir. It was a wonderful show. The Amir Mansour, very insightful, very articulate. It was great having him on and just blessing us with his knowledge of the sport and, you know, not only the sport but the politics and the business side of it too as well. I want to thank you, Butch, Zito, Dr. Chris. It's been a pleasure as always. Bob is our co-pilot, Z.
Oh, man, it's another wonderful show. Wonderful interview with Amir. I want to thank Amir very much. I want to thank Dr. Chris. I want to thank you guys, Todd, Butch, and all my Fighting Words family. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob. And if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call. Butch.
Yeah, I want to thank both you guys. You're always very very knowledgeable, very upfront with everything. And I just sit back sometime and just listen. I wish I had a third of the knowledge. You're half my age, and I wish I had a third of that knowledge that I could understand some other things. But you do a great job each and every week. Can we get a medical update? Ty? Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please, just let them know you're there, that you know that they're there. A simple handshake, a wink, introduce your children to them. That thrills every cop and firefighter. The best thing you can ever say is be safe out there, my brother or my sister. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. To be brought, Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman David Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger. Excuse me. Sparta weather's playing hell with my lungs here. Patrolman Jeffrey Yazwitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Brandy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Candy San Diego Officer Mike Henler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, San Diego, Patrolman Arnolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Powell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brown Rivero, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrol, Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrol Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Sheriff Carol Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Sheriff Ashley Gidden, Eustis, Texas Police Officer David Heffer, Hillsborough County Sheriff Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Ardith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Sergeant Balto Salto, New York Police Department, FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, and our latest entry, Corporal Stephen Boward, Delaware State Police. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time, but sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields. and the sunshine lightly on your face until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless. And have a great week.
Shemarek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sona shene voratfet Hakuig again ma'ilma
to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency.